is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast brought to you by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and we have a very special guest today to break down what I think has been one of the more fun matchups to look into with the Minnesota Vikings, and that is Arif Hassan of the Minnesota Athletic Minnesota. And be sure to go follow Arif on Twitter at Arif Hassan NFL, and also obviously go read him on The Athletic if you're a subscriber. But Arif, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're going to get right into it here. And I wanted to start with on the offensive side of the ball for Minnesota. And obviously the new kind of part of this whole offense is Kirk Cousins. And I think a lot of people, when they signed Kirk Cousins to that deal, were a little skeptical of, you know, was he worth it? And is he a franchise quarterback and all that kind of stuff? What have you seen from him this year, Arif?
I think for the most part, he's a very good quarterback. I think that when you put him in a situation where, you know, most quarterbacks are expected to be in, say, like second and six, he does a very good job with things like pre-snap diagnosis. He does a great job of trying to figure out sort of, you know, which half of the field he should attack, what matchups he should look for, and things like that. You know, I think that in standard down situations, he can play like a top five quarterback. I think the issue is, when you get into situations where he needs to be kind of more contextually aware of what's happening around him, that could be third and long, that could be the 2-minute drill. I think situational awareness is a big problem for him, and that's obviously super important for quarterbacks. And I think that kind of drags him down a lot. I think that he's had a lot of issues with 2-minute drills with Minnesota thus far. I think that they need to do a better job of converting things like third downs. And I think that for the most part, even though you get a guy who has the ability to string together, say, 10 completions in a row, he's a very streaky quarterback, you end up with somebody who, you know, he can put you in a position to win, but if the rest of the team puts him in a position to win, he doesn't always have the ability to execute. So I would say that it's not necessarily that I think Minnesota overpaid for him, because even though I think he's like fourth or fifth in average cap hit over the course of his deal, I think that because of rising quarterback salaries, that's just kind of what you're going to get. But you're not in a situation where I think you've got a quarterback that is going to be the defining feature of why you win. I think he's a really good player, but I do think that his ceiling is capped.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of things that you said. Just from a accuracy standpoint, he's always been a pretty accurate quarterback, and he continues to be that this year with downfield accuracy in general. And obviously when you have Diggs and Thielen, that helps any quarterback too. So he's been able to kind of use those guys to the best of their abilities. You know, in terms of, you know, the rest of it around him, I kind of feel like, you know, the only little things that I see him kind of struggling with are what you said, and also maybe some handling of pressure issues. But also overall, I mean, you know, you'd watch him on that Green Bay game and he's going through the progressions, you know, at a high level and seeing defensive coverages and diagnosing those things and obviously throwing the ball accurately downfield. And he certainly hasn't hindered Thielen and Diggs' production this year by any means. I mean, those two guys are still lighting the world on fire. And, you know, I will get to in a minute here kind of like what's holding the offense back from being an elite level offense. But I don't know if Kirk Cousins is what's holding them back necessarily. I think that he's been pretty solid this year and kind of what they paid for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that you're right about, you know, the pressure thing. I think that, you know, he definitely thrives in an environment where things are kind of set up around him. And, you know, every quarterback does well if they've got a good supporting cast, but he's the kind of guy that can, you know, maybe maximize the supporting cast he has around him, which isn't to say he necessarily elevates the level of play of the teammates around him, but he can certainly take advantage of everything they can offer. But unfortunately, without, I think, the kind of pass protection that he had for his first 2 years as a starter in Washington, you know, he does have some concerns. What's interesting is I think everyone kind of agrees that he does struggle under pressure. His numbers under pressure are actually really good. If you take a look at Pro Football Focus or ESPN's, you know, passer rating under pressure, they all tend to be, you know, they have them like in the top 8 or the top 5. And so I find it interesting, but I don't disagree with any of it, that he does have those issues under pressure. He's a quarterback that very often a lot of the numbers are kind of at odds with how people kind of evaluate him. And I'm becoming kind of comfortable with that, even though I'm a bit of a numbers guy, because he can just kind of, create some kind of weird situation. So that all makes sense. But I think that you're right that, you know, his strengths definitely include that accuracy. I think that he's got better than expected arm strength. I think a lot of people were kind of surprised to see some of the throws he threaded together. You take a look at Next Gen Stats' expected completion percentage, which takes, into account a variety of that. And the three most improbable throws, I think one is to Tyreek Hill and two are to Adam Thielen from Kirk Cousins. And so you end up with these wonderful, beautiful throws, these insane catches that the two of them have put together to kind of dig you out of some difficult situations. And that's kind of what you get with kind of the Cousins experience, because he's not a game manager, but he also isn't a gunslinger. He's somewhere in between where he has kind of an appropriate level of aggressiveness in standard down situations. And because of his accuracy and arm strength, he can create some pretty big moments.
Yeah, he had that throw to Thielen in the Green Bay game up the right sideline where Thielen caught it in between two guys. I'm still not really sure how Thielen caught it. But that is kind of what you get with these two receivers. Both of those guys just amazing in those contested catch situations. All right, the next question we wanted to ask you is just, obviously you go to the NFC Championship game last year with Case Keenum and Pat Shurmur as the offensive coordinator. Then you have a whole new regime at OC and quarterback. What have been kind of the main changes you would say to the offense with DeFilippo and Cousins under center?
Yeah, I think with Keenum and Shurmur, they were a lot more comfortable with Sandlot style play. You'd end up with a lot of improvisation. You'd have to rely on Keenum's intuition matching up with the intuition of Thielen and Diggs, and very often they did, and they were incredible receivers, and so they could kind of make up for some mistakes. And Keenum is a very, very aggressive quarterback. He's a bit of a gunslinger, but he also doesn't have the arm that you typically associate with those kinds of aggressive quarterbacks. So he ended up having kind of a below average arm, but just a willingness to kind of chuck it deep. And he had kind of the perfect receivers for it, but it ended up creating this very, very volatile looking offense that, worked out more often than it didn't. Zimmer, I think, mentioned sometime week 15, 16, that Keenum was playing with a horseshoe around his neck, which I think is a good indication of A, that Zimmer knew that I think that the quarterback was getting, kind of lucky on a lot of these throws, but B, that he knew he was getting a lot of production out of it, at least in the short term. So you ended up seeing kind of a lot of those, I wouldn't call them prayers, but a lot of those kind of high variance throws that it ended up working out for the Vikings, but I think in the long run is not something that they thought that they could rely on. It did mean that Keenum had the ability to kind of obviate pressure. A lot of pressure would come up the middle or around the edge. And he had the ability to prevent a lot of that pressure from turning into sacks. I think the Vikings have one of the lowest sack rates in the NFL, but one of the highest pressure rates in the NFL. And a lot of that was because of Keenum, both because he would hold on to the ball and invite pressure, but also because he did a really phenomenal job of winning sacks. That's not really what Cousins does. He's a very kind of methodical quarterback. The play has to be, or it doesn't have to be, but the play kind of goes according to plan. And then when things break down and he has to improvise, he kind of suffers a little bit, whereas Keenum is kind of the opposite, where he didn't necessarily always figure out kind of what the pre-snap read was. He didn't necessarily always figure out sort of what the plan was in terms of how to execute it, but he did have a really good intuition of what he needed to do kind of as things were breaking down. So you end up with two actually very opposite style quarterbacks, where you've got a sandlot guy without a huge arm versus a guy who goes according to plan and he has a pretty great arm.
Yeah, that was like two opposite descriptions there. And it makes sense with Keenum. You mentioned he was like a wizard last year getting out of sacks, which obviously added a lot to that offense. But now they've gone completely to an efficient quarterback in Cousins. It seems like that's more of a pocket passer and a guy that's going to be, a little bit more accurate, but maybe not have those like high level plays like Keenum did last year necessarily. And obviously DeFilippo comes from the Eagles last couple of years, and you definitely see to me some similarities between what the Eagles ran and what Minnesota's running. That he's added some RPO elements, he's added some bootleg off of zone blocking schemes, that kind of stuff that you see a lot of the time in Philadelphia. But I think that they've gone from a very volatile, like you said, offense where it's either a home run or a strikeout. And now they have a very efficient quarterback in Cousins. So very different styles for sure.
Yeah. And I think one more thing I'd like to add about DeFilippo versus Shurmur is that with Shurmur, I think he liked to treat Diggs and Thielen as kind of very similar receivers, which, I mean, I think that they are. I think that their strengths and weaknesses are very similar. And you wrote scouting reports, it'd be kind of difficult to tell which one is which. Where I think DeFilippo likes to emphasize the areas where they do have those differences. Like Diggs is a better yards after the catch receiver. He's going to use him a lot more on shorter routes. He's going to use him a lot more on screens. He's going to use him a lot more in the run game and stuff like that. And then Thielen is a bit of a stronger receiver, so he likes to put him on the sideline, even though he's also really good from the slot. So you'll find out that, you know, Thielen is in the slot 60% of the time, but he ends up taking all these throws on the sideline. And that's because he has a lot of strength to muscle out, especially against these slot receiver or slot cornerbacks in contested catch situations. And Diggs has, I think, a better intuition for the ball, so they end up both being good contested catch receivers. But Thielen is less likely to be kind of thrown off his route as he execute the route process. So you end up seeing kind of two different usage patterns for these receivers in the DeFilippo offense, where I think in the Shurmur offense, they were just like, hey, we've got two good receivers. They do the same things really well. Let's just have them do the same things.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right. The next question we had here was just, you know, this offense, when you look at it on paper, Thielen, Diggs, Dalvin Cook, Kyle Rudolph, they have all the pieces. And yet, when you look at the stats, they're pretty much middle of the road in points per game, yards, DVOA, all that kind of fancy stuff too. So what's really been holding back this offense, would you say, from, you know, taking that step forward into an elite type of category?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the offensive line. I know that Sam Monson at Pro Football Focus, he's got this theory that I think holds up pretty well, that once you kind of hit a 40% pressure rate in a game, that's it. It's so difficult for quarterbacks to come back and execute and win in that situation that it can be kind of a killer, kind of almost regardless of how good your quarterback is, unless you get into like a really weird situation like with Case Keenum. And the Vikings have entered that 40% territory a lot. And sometimes, you know, Cousins kind of shows out and he does a pretty good job. But a lot of times you end up where, you know, Cousins doesn't have enough time to throw downfield or anything like that. They have to take these chunk plays, and that's not good enough. And then other times, the offense is suffering because, you know, Cousins will just make a mistake as a result of a lack of situational awareness. We talked about, you know, his issues under pressure. A lot of times he has a lot of difficulty sensing kind of what's happening to his blind side, to his backside. And that's why he kind of leads the league in fumbles among quarterbacks. That's why he leads the league, I think, at batted passes among quarterbacks, because he doesn't have the ability to kind of change his arm angle to adjust his throw. That leads to some turnovers. There's some kind of unusual turnovers with, you know, the Thielen fumble against the Saints, the pick six against the Saints again, where you couldn't really blame Cousins, you couldn't really blame Diggs, but it just kind of happened to be a product of the two of them not being on the same page. So, yeah, I think a lot of the issues with the offense can be brought down to A, that situational awareness problem, B, the offensive line. A lot of people want to talk about the run game. I do think it's important given how much the Vikings like to rely on it. It's not a very productive run game. Dalvin Cook, like you mentioned, is really supremely talented. He's like top seven or six in like PFF's elusive rating, but the offensive line is not creating the lanes and alleys for him to, I think, really produce. So it kind of does all stem from there.
Yeah.
That was something I wanted to ask you about, was the running back usage. Obviously, you got kind of a thunder and lightning situation there with him and Murray. Mm-hmm. I think they're both good backs. But when I look at, you know, the back that I would rather have carrying the ball, it would be Cook. Just because, you know, it's and me and Evan were talking about it just before this, how, you know, during the draft, everybody was sort of freaking out that he only ran a 4.5. And when I watched him in college or even in high school, he's just the fastest guy on the field every time he got out there and had breakaway speed. But of course he runs a 4.5 and all of a sudden he's slow. But yeah, you know, do you think that the Vikings are using them correctly? It felt like against the Packers, they did a pretty decent job of getting Cook in space at times. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like the way they use those backs is efficient and, you know, the way it should be, the way right. it's used?
Yeah, I think it's difficult because it's difficult to just generally gauge the usage of the backs given the quality and state of the offensive line, and also the fact that, that Cook was missing a couple of games because of a hamstring injury. Right. But I think that your intuition is mostly correct. I think that it would be nice to see Cook on more outside runs, to see him in space a little bit more often. The Vikings ran very, very few running back screens for a while. Obviously, in the Packers game, they ran some very, very successful ones, and I think they'll probably go dip back into that well pretty soon. But yeah, I think offensively, we ended up in a situation where Cook was just being treated, you know, like a running back, and Latavius Murray was treated like a running back instead of being treated like, it's kind of the opposite of the Diggs Thielen situation. Instead of being treated like, you know, backs with particular strengths and weaknesses that you want to take advantage of in certain parts of the game. So yeah, I think the running back usage wasn't exactly efficient in terms of how you would dole out those carries and what situations, but I think it's moving in that direction.
Mm. Makes sense.
Yeah. It sounds to me like, you know, just from watching what you're saying, Arif, is just, you know, offensive line play is underrated.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you have a bad offensive line, you can have all the talent in the world and the skill position players and the quarterback. But if you have that bad offensive line, it can plummet the entire offense into being, you know, like an average unit. Like this Minnesota team, I mean, we're talking to Belichick yesterday and he's just like gushing about all the skill players. You know, obviously the receivers and Cook and all these guys. And then you look at the numbers and they're just, you know, they're 16th in points per game. And you're like, you know, what gives? Like, how is that possible if, you know, the best coach of all time is saying that these guys are as good as anybody, and which he's right about, obviously. It's, you know, that offensive line is definitely, you know, something to monitor in this game for sure. All right, let's move over to the defense side of the ball, where earlier in the season, Mike Zimmer was not too pleased with his defense and you know, really kind of came out publicly and said that, I think what he said, that the coverage was some of the worst that he's ever been a part of or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, now all of a sudden it looks like they're starting to play Minnesota, you know, Vikings defense again. What has been the key to that turnaround? Has it just been players improving or scheme changes or a little bit of both?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. So the first several weeks, the Vikings played what they typically do since 2014 when Zimmer arrived, a lot of single high safety with cover three, cover one looks, the match coverage that Zimmer likes to use, that Belichick likes to use. Those work really well with cover three, and you could design some really interesting blitz packages around cover three. I think Alabama does that a lot. But because it's been happening for the last 3-4 years, and because more and more defenses are using it, you know, say, I mean, obviously the Patriots, the Bengals, San Francisco, Seattle, et cetera. I think because a lot more defenses are doing that, you end up in a situation where offenses are very used to seeing what this looks like and are having more and more reps against it and can do a better job attacking it. And so they've changed their coverage style to be a little bit more cover two, cover four based. With too high safety, they like, you know, the cover six kind of, you've got quarters on one side, half on the other. So that base coverage has changed and it's created different looks and it's given the Vikings, I think, a little bit of an advantage again when it came to scouting. But also, you know, I think that the players have done a better job of avoiding some of the misdirection. Early in the year, they were doing a really poor job of dealing with things like play action, dealing with things like pre-snap motion. They were taken advantage of in space because they were always a step behind in those situations. And now they're doing a much better job of recognizing kind of what the keys to play action are, what the keys to the actual run game are, and doing a better job making sure they're kind of in the right position and situation. There was a lot of miscommunication early between the nickel and the linebacker, and that ended up creating a lot of problems, especially against Buffalo, which you'd never really think you'd hear, right? Like, oh, the Buffalo offense really got them. But, you know, they did. And a lot of that was miscommunication. And that's kind of been resolved just as time has gone by. Individually, some players are playing better. I think that that's important to say is that, you know, I think Xavier Rhodes is in phase more often. Trey Waynes is in phase more often. Kendricks is doing a much better job in coverage than he was before. But I think a lot of it is kind of this back end stuff that's very difficult usually to diagnose, like how they're doing against play action, kind of you know, what the Shanahan McVay school of offense was doing a really great job, I think, against the Vikings in particular. And they use a particular set of zone action and play action type stuff that the Vikings fell victim to. But they've kind of adjusted. They kind of remain one of the best second half defenses in football. I think they're like fourth or fifth in points allowed in the second half. And so one of the keys to the way the defense operates is they might give up points in the opening two, three drives. In fact, they do fairly regularly. But in the second half, they're one of the most difficult defenses to score on. And a lot of that has to do with in-game adjustments.
You described the Patriots defense a lot of the time too there. Very good, like, second half defense, because they usually make those in-game adjustments to kind of get, you know, first quarter is kind of like a feel out process. And then the fourth quarter, the Patriots, you know, and the Vikings have been atop, you know, at the top of the league in terms of keeping teams out of the end zone in that fourth quarter. But I've definitely noticed what you said about the way that they've been playing on the back end, and Harrison Smith does a great job of disguising the two high safety coverages, and it's very difficult to kind of sniff out. But that's kind of like been a big theme, I think, this year across football in general, is that a lot of teams, like you said, have adopted the single high looks that, you know, Seattle and the Patriots and the Vikings and other teams that have been successful on defense have kind of adopted, and these offensive coordinators are catching up. And they're starting to figure it out, and they're starting to figure out, you know, great ways to kind of exploit the rules and those types of coverages, and a lot of, you know, obviously like deep crossing routes and stuff like that. And, you know, some of the jet and play action motion off of zone stuff that like the Shanahan McVay offense has run. And I wrote today about, you know, the play action pass has been a big topic in for the Patriots, because they've been really good at them this year in particular over the last couple of weeks, you know, even more so. Tom Brady is completing like 91% of his passes off of play action over the last 2 weeks. Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. So I wrote about that today because the Vikings, obviously, like you said, struggled with it earlier in the year, kind of righted the ship a little bit here late. But the Patriots, you know, Zimmer said they're the best play action team in the NFL. And that's kind of holding true to a lot of the stats and stuff like that too. So I think that that's going to be a very interesting kind of chess match of McDaniels versus, you know, Zimmer, you know, being able to see if they can kind of exploit some of those play action weaknesses that the Niners and the Rams and some of the teams early on in the season were able to attack.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think 90%, Jesus. Yeah. It's going to be...
with like almost 12 yards per attempt. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be, I think, a really fascinating matchup. I think and Belichick reserves a lot of praise, I think, for the Vikings defense. And I see the Vikings defense all the time. I think they're great. But even I was kind of surprised. I think he compared Harrison Smith to Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. Like, okay, yeah, no, sure. And that's actually not something I really disagree with. I know Brett Coleman put together a great video about why Harrison Smith and Troy Polamalu are very similar players, but it's always difficult, I think, when you feel like a player should get more recognition, he doesn't get it. But yeah, it's I think that because the Patriots defensively practice a lot of stuff that has gotten stolen kind of throughout the league, and Zimmer's picked up a lot of it. And because the Patriots have taken a lot of Zimmer's blitz packages and stuff like that, Brady's probably very familiar with what the Vikings try to do defensively. The match coverage stuff was working really, really well in 2014 and 2015. But, you know, tricking teams into being in like a half man, half zone kind of look, you know, that's not really, I think, going to work that much against Brady. I think that when the Vikings go up against, you know, really high level quarterbacks, they tend to blitz a lot less often, which, you know, that all makes sense. You know, Brady's kind of one of the best against the blitz. Breeze was one of the best against the blitz. Rodgers is one of the best against the blitz. And they tend to do more damage when you draw players in coverage. So I think we'll see they'll try to create a lot of one-on-one matchups along that defensive line by showing blitz, and then they won't blitz, you know, just so that they don't kind of expose that hole in coverage. But yeah, it's going to be particularly difficult because Zimmer tends to have an advantage against, you know, offenses that, you know, obviously are just not very familiar with playing against him, because one of the things I kind of hear about opposing offenses when they play Zimmer is that it looks a lot different live than it does on film, because the stuff that's really confusing ends up being kind of confusing on the ground, right? And so once you become familiar with that kind of defense, it becomes a little bit easier to kind of dissect it. And I think a lot of what Belichick has done defensively, going all the way back to like 2000, even, has been kind of adapted into different schemes, and in a lot of ways, very similar to what the Bengals and then the Vikings did. So this might be, I think, a poor matchup from that perspective. But I mean, you've got two really smart coaches going up against each other that they'll throw in some really interesting looks.
Yeah, I think. Go ahead.
Where would you say the? Because one of the things I was impressed by, you know, when I watched the Vikings is seeing that the pressure can come from different places. It's not just outside pressure, inside pressure. It feels like, you know, it can come from any source, and, you know, with speed rushes along the outside or bull rushes from the inside and stuff like that. Do you feel like that's another strength of this front that, you know, it's not just, you know, one or two places where the pressure is always going to come from. It can be from anywhere.
Yeah, I think so. I think when you've got players like Danielle Hunter and Sheldon Richardson, they can win inside their gap, outside their gap when they're attacking the man. They can win a bull speed or with technique. But then the blitz packages also allow them to send a bunch of different types of players. So for a while, they were leading the league in like defensive back pressures. Because of how often they would blitz defensive backs. But, you know, they changed that up. They don't blitz defensive backs that much anymore, and I think they'll change it up again and blitz them again because they've got good blitzing defensive backs, especially Harrison Smith. But also, you know, now that Jayron Kearse is playing in the nickel a lot, you've got the 6'4 safety that can come kind of bearing down. You know, Mackenzie Alexander off the nickel does a really good job blitzing. They send linebackers up the middle a lot with Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks. And the thing that really makes it difficult to account for all of these individual players is sometimes they'll just put nine players up at the line of scrimmage and then rush five. And you have to figure out the four who aren't rushing. And that's hell for anybody. But also what makes it really difficult is that they'll stunt and twist a lot of their defensive linemen really effectively. Like every defense stunts and twists and changes gaps between defensive linemen. But when you've got defensive linemen as athletic as the Vikings do, and they tend to prioritize athleticism when drafting and acquiring them in free agency, they can show up in their new gap with surprising immediacy. And it's very, very difficult for even very good offensive linemen to kind of deal with that. So not only is pressure kind of coming from any potential position group, but within those position groups, you know, linebackers will twist with defensive linemen, which you don't tend to see very often on blitzes. Even I've seen Harrison Smith do that, where he exchanged gaps with Danielle Hunter and ended up getting a pressure or a sack. So it can come from any position group, but it can also come from any gap kind of regardless of how they initially line up. And I think that's a lot of how that pressure package has been successful.
Yeah, that defensive front is, you know, the Patriots have played Jacksonville, they've played Houston, they played some good fronts, but this one is right up there, I think, with the rest of them. And Belichick praising this team, you know, you can kind of tell sometimes when it's legitimate praise and when he's just doing it because he feels like he has to. Yeah. This week has been legitimate praise for Minnesota. I think this week in Kansas City are the 2 weeks where I've seen Belichick, you know, this genuine about how much he appreciates just the coaching and you know, the obviously the players and how talented the team is. And, you know, this is going to be a great one. So we're all looking forward to it. Adam, I think we're out of questions, right? I think we got we did a good job. Arif, tell everybody where they can follow you and read you, and if you want to tease anything or anything, go ahead.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Arif Hasan NFL, which you mentioned at the beginning of the show. I'll spell it out real quick, Arif Hasan NFL. I write primarily for The Athletic, The Athletic Minnesota, so you can find me at theathletic.com. My next piece, I'm going to try and break down a Patriots matchup. So it's due Friday morning. I still haven't figured out what matchup I want to talk about. But I think it'll probably be something like Jayron Kearse and Gronkowski, because I think, you know, putting a safety and nickel on a tight end like that, that's going to be kind of interesting. So something along those lines, you'll find that at The Athletic soon.
Yeah, I hope we get a Harrison Smith Gronk matchup at least once or twice too, because that one is going to be like a heavyweight bout. But thank you very much for coming on with us, and looking forward to the game and hearing your commentary of the game as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem. We want to thank Arif Hasan of The Athletic Minnesota once again for coming on with us. As you can tell, very smart guy, very much in the know on the Minnesota Vikings. So if you want to learn a little bit more about the Vikings, then go ahead and check out Arif on Twitter. We mentioned his Twitter handle a couple times there, and you know, he's going to be a guy that you're going to want to pay attention to over the next couple of days. So be sure to go check that out. But for us, Adam, this is our time of the show where we get to tease what we're doing over the next few days and the weekend. So what do you got going on?
So it should be a pretty busy weekend. On Friday and Saturday, there's MIAA Super Bowls at Gillette, state titles, all that stuff on the line. And then Sunday, we're going to find out what bowl BC is going to, which is it. You know, we'll see what happens. But and also, you know, there's a lot of coaching stuff going on. Scott Leffler, has the offensive coordinator at BC, is taking the head coaching position at Bowling Green. And UMass is still looking for, you know, a head coach after getting rid of Mark Whipple. So all that and more on Mass Varsity.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And the BC Bowl, you know, I hope it's something close, you know.
It will be.
Yeah, you don't.
The projections I'm looking at are the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit, the Sun Bowl. I think that's in El Paso.
The Sun Bowl would be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. I'd welcome that.
Yeah. That's the bowl season is always fun for me because of the names. Yeah. Like, I always get a kick out of like the obscure names, like the Meineke Car Care Bowl, or like, you know,
is it bowl this year?
Yeah. So we'll see where BC goes. Obviously, a lot of people, I'm sure, will be paying attention to the college football playoff and what goes on with that as well. So that'll be fun. Basically, the college football playoff to me is which team's going to get killed by Alabama. Yeah, but you know, we can still play the games, as they say. You know, they still play the games. But on CLNSmedia.com, go check out Wrote Today about the Patriots play action passing game. We talked a little bit about it with Arif and just, you know, what makes them so good at play action and what they've been able to do in recent weeks that I've found really interesting with the usage of Cordarrelle Patterson. Or Cordarrelle, I always say his name wrong. But I think that they've kind of used Cordarrelle Patterson in a way that it's definitely shocked Mike Zimmer. They were like, oh, wow, like, you know, he's a very versatile weapon that we probably didn't use to the best of his abilities. And just schematically how they've been able to use Cordarrelle in ways that are going to confuse defenses and make, you know, for trouble in the secondary in terms of where their coverage is going to be and stuff like that has been really cool, the way that McDaniels and Belichick have deployed him. So go check that out. Tomorrow I'll have my Patriots game plan up, as always, or Friday, depending on when you're listening to this. So go check that out as well. Going to be about shutting down Thielen and Diggs and how I think the Patriots will attack those two guys. And then obviously we'll have wall-to-wall coverage at the game on Sunday at Gillette. Sorry, pregame, you know, during game, postgame, the usual stuff. So make sure you go and check that out too on our Twitter at PatriotsCLNS, on YouTube. PatriotsCLNS YouTube page is where all the videos go that we do pre and post game. So make sure to check that all that stuff out too. I think that about does it for us this time, but we're going to be back next week to preview the Miami Dolphins. And the Patriots, these next 3 weeks to me, Adam, are big for the Pats, because you got Minnesota, who's a great team. Then you go at Miami, which has just been a house of horrors for Brady. And then you go at Pittsburgh, which is kind of the game of the year there at the end of the season. The next 3 weeks, I really feel like we're going to learn, is this Patriots team, you know, for real? Obviously, we know that they're a playoff team, but are they, you know, elite Super Bowl contender type team? Yeah. And what'd you say?
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. Yeah, so it's gonna be interesting to see. I think that, you know, that Miami game, although everybody always says, oh, they should easily beat Miami for some reason or another, whether it's the hot weather or South Beach or whatever the case may be, they just can't seem to get a win in Miami's in recent years. So that'll be a very interesting one. The Dolphins do have Ryan Tannehill back, I believe, so that he'll be at quarterback, and we'll see what happens. Obviously, the Patriots, you know, blew them out here at Gillette, but like I said, it flip flops when you go on the road a lot of the time. So Patriots this year, I think, could really benefit from going 6-0 against the AFC East. You know, the teams are just not as good as years past. In years past, they haven't been very good in either, but this year I feel like they're even worse than usual. And obviously, with the seeding being what it is for the Patriots in the AFC, they could really use some of those free wins against the AFCs. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin. Thanks once again to Arif Hassan, our guest, for coming on with us. I'm Evan Lazar. Until next week, thanks for listening.